Today on Maine Calling, paying closer attention to nature. Say you're hiking on a wooded trail and you glance at the trees as you go along, or point out a wildflower by the path. Yes, you're in a natural place and seeing your surroundings, but imagine instead staying still for a while in those woods, staring at ants as they collect food, inhaling the scent of a mossy log, listening to the chirp of a frog in the distance, studying the geometry of the flower's petals. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today we'll learn how to use all of our senses to truly appreciate nature and why that can be beneficial. And we'll hear how ecologists and naturalists utilize photography, writing, music, and other means to help capture and document the wonders of the natural world. Maine Calling is coming right up.
Maine Calling on Demand is made possible by Maine Farmland Trust, working with farmers to grow the future of farming and food in Maine. Learn how you can get involved at mainefarmlandtrust.org/learn. Welch & Forbes, working with clients to manage the full range of events that come with building wealth, from investments to trustee services. More at welchforbes.com. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering healthcare, education, and support to island and coastal Downeys communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today, we are learning what it means to really connect with nature, to pay attention to the natural world at a deeper level, and how that can be beneficial. And we'll find out what naturalists do to capture or document their observations about nature. Joining me, Andrew Brand, Director of Horticulture at Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. He is a nature photographer whose images have a following on social media. Jennifer Comeau is an author, speaker, and singer focused on nature themes. She's also a certified forest therapy guide, and she's written a children's book called The Inside of Me. And Chris Louie is executive director and founder of Raven Interpretive Programs. He's also a certified Maine guide, a master bird bander, and nature photographer as well. He co-wrote the new book, The Science of Watching, The Art of Seeing, The Power of Nature Absorption. We invite you to join the conversation. Tell us about how you connect with nature and whether it has helped you in some way. Send an email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Andy, I'll start with you. I think a lot of people in Maine would say they appreciate nature, they love nature, but today we're taking it to a new level, to the next level. So describe what it means to you to pay close attention to nature, to really deeply connect with nature.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks, Cindy. For me, I work outdoors quite a bit and, you know, exposed to nature every day. And I think what I appreciate so much about it is the feeling I get when I'm outdoors and interacting with nature. And, you know, there are the obvious things when you see certain animals and things that everybody, you know, loves, when you see a newborn fawn, things like that. But for me, it's the smaller things that I think many people often overlook because we're in a hurry to get to someplace or we're on our computer and such. But if we just take the time and you step outside and you it takes you an hour to go a short distance, the things you will see are so fascinating, from crystals that develop in the winter or bubbles on a stream that then have the reflection of the forest above you. Any time of the year you step outside, there's going to be something new to see. Every hour you step outside, there's going to be something to see. That for me, it just brings me joy to see these things up close and then to use my iPhone to take a photo of something that I think is just so amazing, and then being able to share that with people to hopefully show folks what is out there right in their own backyards. Literally, it doesn't matter if you're surrounded by a forest or you're stepping outside, you know, your urban yard. There are things there that are equally as fascinating as if you were in the middle of the main forest. So for me, it's just that the joy and just appreciation of the biodiversity that we as humans are part of. I think I'll stop there. I think.
Well, I do want to come back to you about the incredible photos that you take, those close-ups. But let's talk with Jennifer for a moment. Share your story about what you do and how you switched into being so involved with celebrating nature from a very different occupation. And tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, thank you. And thanks for having me. I have had decades in the corporate world. I got 2 degrees in engineering and was in that workaday, heads down, focused on output and productivity and results. And one day I kind of woke up and said, what is this all about? None of this is feeding my soul. And I began to remember the girl who climbed trees, the girl who played with the slippery kiss of pollywogs in the pond, and began to kind of do a complete transformation back to that original love of nature. And, you know, it's not lost on me that we're experiencing degradation of human health at precisely the same time as we're experiencing the degradation of global ecology. What's happening inside is happening outside. And we really are a mirror of each other. And so taking time, I love what you said, Andy, about slowing down, maybe taking an hour to get to, you know, only a few 100 yards, because we've been programmed to devalue this slowing down into nature. Instead, it's about like conquering the mountain in less than 60 minutes, or, you know, I want to beat my last time in this particular run or this sport. And while all that's great, there's something to be said about regaining balance, of slowing down and really belonging to a landscape, because we are nature too. It's in us. And so there's a part of me that had felt this, what has been called species loneliness, because we've cut ourselves off from the rest of the natural world. And so when I realized that, I don't do anything by halves. So I dove in. And now I run a wild wonder forest bathing business and take people, especially hard charging executives, out into the woods. And it's incredible what happens. In our training, we were told the forest is the therapist. The guide opens the doors. And so that's really what I do with my training is, I simply invite people through a series of just simple high sensory invitations to go out and slow down and see what happens.
I think that's such a good reminder, because I have to admit, in preparing for this show, you know, I do also thoroughly enjoy getting out in nature. I go for hikes, but you're usually just trying to get from the beginning of the hike to the end of the hike. And so I actually, because I was preparing for the show, I made myself stop. You know, it's the slowing down you mentioned. I just to stop and sit there and just focus. So it's just a simple reminder to do that is what it seems to be a lot about. But Chris, let's turn to you. A lot of what Jennifer was just saying is your focus as well. So tell us about the book. It's The Science of Watching, The Art of Seeing, and The Power of Nature Absorption. So can you elaborate on that idea of absorbing nature?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming. I wrote this with my 2 sisters, and interestingly enough, we were all, the 3 of us were brought up in Boston, on the North Shore of Boston, in a city environment. But we had a summer home that we just loved, and it was magical to us. And I could clearly see the contrast between the country, as we called it, which was on the Maine border in New Hampshire, and then going back to Massachusetts. And as you know, my life progressed, this love of nature just evolved a connection with nature that both Andrew and Jennifer clearly outlined this something that happens to us. And I found it interesting from a science perspective to look at what is happening to the watcher. And it becomes clear that there's a science to this, and the evolution of that science reflects on an evolution of the heart and our spiritual connection, a massive connection that I think both Andrew and Jennifer would agree upon. It doesn't take much of being absorbed by nature to clearly see this. So the book we've used as a compass to point people in a direction of experiencing what happens to you. What's the value to you when you put yourself in this position? And there are many books about nature and observing nature, but this is about the observer, and we've been pleased with the reaction so far.
Well, what's interesting is, as I mentioned at the top, this is sort of the next level of appreciate beyond just appreciating nature, and there are all these terms for it that, you know, Jennifer does forest bathing, right? We hear about forest bathing. We hear about rewilding and what you've referred to as nature absorption. Is it just that these terms are trendy, or is there really a collective movement happening, you think? Chris, go ahead. You can continue.
Well, you know, many of you would be familiar with Richard Louv's book, Last Child in the Woods, several years ago. Just a great change in people's perspective of what's happening. And you mentioned technology when we were discussing things early on, and how that's influenced us. And I wanted to put a spin on a term that Louv coined, nature deficit disorder. And I wanted it to be a positive switch to nature absorption and what happens there. And I think, yeah, people have to come up with different terms to give a label to what's going on with themselves. And that in itself is interesting. We are seeing a transformation, and I don't think it's just with the vocabulary. I think people are experiencing more and more of this in recent years. I remember talking with my sisters when we were finishing up the book, and we said, we have to get going on with this because we're starting to see it coming out in, you know, many other places. And that's an awareness, that's a group awareness beyond just the individual awareness. And that becomes clearer and clearer with more nature absorption.
Andy, I wanted to come back to you about the photos you mentioned. In addition to being your role at the Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens, you sort of have this almost side occupation now of taking these photos and sharing them. So what are you trying to convey, and how does documenting nature help in this process?
Yeah, so I use my iPhone and because it is so convenient, and you know, I'm out and about quite a bit, whether it's at work or on the weekends. I try to get out, even mostly in my backyard. And, you know, I'm fortunate to have a field next to my yard, so I can explore there. And I guess what I'm trying to do with the photography is show folks what is in their yards. And, you know, yes, we see butterflies and you know, other types of insects, but have we seen them up close? And have we seen leaves when they're backlit by sun that reveals this incredible venation that are in the foliage, or in seeds, how seeds are dispersed, photographs of them and patterns, just trying to convey all of this wonder that is right around us, surrounding us every day, that I think we all take for granted often and don't take the time to appreciate it. So with my photography, I'm hoping to not only share beautiful pictures with everybody, that hopefully to encourage people then to, like, hey, you know what, I should go out in my yard and let's see the neat things that I can find there. And then I think if they do that and they start seeing all these fascinating images that they're seeing with their own eyes, or maybe trying to take some with their phones or with their cameras, that they'll end up with a more of an appreciation and maybe take the time and share their enjoyment with nature with others. And it'll just continue to increase this wonder of nature that I think all of us have. And I think we just need to get out and experience nature. And I think that wonder that we do have, some folks probably a little deeper than others. Mine is like everywhere. But I think people will then, I just think they'll lead better lives and happier lives, being exposed to all of this beauty and, you know, the fascination that you can see on people's faces when I show some of these photos is just truly amazing.
And the sense I get from you is that you're trying to tell people it's easy to do. It's not like you have to have any special skills.
Very easy.
You just need to look closely, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and you discover things. Well, let's go to a call now. Diana is calling in. Go ahead, Diana. What did you want to talk about?
Oh, hi. Thank you, Cindy, for this marvelous show. And I'm just so grateful that I had a chance to listen to Andy from the Coastal Botanical, where I just went around Christmas time for the first time. And I also can relate to Jennifer because, like her, I've been in corporate Manhattan. Well, she's not in Manhattan, but I've been corporate for 30 years and completely desensitized. So this call has just been amazing to me. I relate very much to Chris and his two sisters working on that book. It's just awesome. So I am not anywhere near as elevated in my comments as these three callers I've just had the honor to listen to.
Oh, that's so nice, Diana. And were there some photos that you wanted to tell us about?
Yeah. My husband and I, to escape COVID, we moved to Maine from New York and opened an Airbnb, knowing nothing about anything, really nothing, had no idea about, except that we knew it was beautiful because we'd been tourists in Maine before. But living here is a whole other thing. Like I said, we just saw the Botanical Gardens just the first time a few months ago. And one of our guests, I mean, all of our guests are like random. We do not know them in advance. This one couple, turns out, was from Upper West Side, New York, ironically, is a wildlife photographer. We were puzzled because he and his wife never moved from our front yard. We live right on Patton Bay. So we are surrounded by water. It is quite stunning, quite quiet. You can really hear your own thoughts. And all they did, his wife was the spotter, and she would say, she wouldn't actually say it out loud. They had some kind of hand signal of where he should go with his gigantic camera to spot this heron. Now, they were here for almost a week. They went every day, all day long, and eventually, this heron became their friend. I mean, we saw it. We couldn't understand. I mean, it was amazing. They had made a connection with the heron. And he took some of the most stunning photographs I've ever seen of a great blue heron in four different positions, spread wide-winged, coming into the water, leaving the water, and just standing looking to see where the food is.
Diana, I understand you're sharing those photos somewhere if people want to see them.
At the Blue Hill Artist Cafe in the back room, and we've donated them to the Blue Hill Artist Cafe all month, so folks, and they're not for sale, so folks can just enjoy these amazing photographs. That's so gigantic. So beautiful.
Well, that's really wonderful. Thank you for sharing your story. We are going to take a quick break right now. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. When is the last time you sat still and just noticed the nature all around you? We're discussing the benefits of immersing yourself in the natural world. My guests are Jennifer Comeau, a forest therapy guide and author, speaker, and singer-songwriter. Chris Louie is a Maine guide, bird expert, nature photographer, and executive director of Raven Interpretive Programs. And Andy Brand is a nature photographer as well and director of horticulture at Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. Join the conversation. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org or comment on Facebook or Instagram or give us a call 1-800-399-3566. And we are asking you, if you're on social media, go ahead and share any nature photos that you would like to share with us. Jennifer, we were talking with Andy about how he uses photography to capture nature and to share it with others. You have other creative means of doing that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, in fact, among the research around the benefits of being out in nature is a boosted creativity. So what I find for myself, in fact, my children's book, which is called The Inside of Me, which is about what happens on the inside when we go outside, happened because I was sitting underneath a big beech tree, one of my favorites. We all call her the grandmother tree in Hope Cemetery. So again, I don't have to be in a national park. I'm right down the street. And I just had this line come to me. Is there a place in the sun I can skip, roll, or run? Then rest neath a tree, hear the breeze in her leaves. And I know enough now that when I go out in nature and slow down, my nervous system calms, my mind stills, my heart opens, and it becomes kind of a portal to creativity. So at that moment, I just started writing, and then it goes on to the next nature place. Is there a pond filled with frogs, and et cetera, et cetera? So, and I do think back to this idea of technology that you were talking about. I know Cornell's Merlin app, which is the bird identifying app, sound, photos, it's incredible. And I do think that when people become intimate with their natural landscape, they begin to notice things like, does everyone here know the order in which their spring trees leaf out around them? And do we know the order in which the trees let their leaves fall in autumn? It's that intimacy, I think, that once we begin to have a relationship, we notice these things. The observer that Chris mentioned as well, because there's a lot of health benefits, and we can go into that science if we want. But I think we feel it. I think we feel it. And so Sharon Blackie, in her book, she's an Irish mythologist, The Enchanted Life. I love this quote. She says, the crow is counting you in. So when you're out there, the crow has an opinion about you, just as you might have an opinion about the crow.
That's a great reminder. Your book is beautiful. You mentioned it's called The Inside of Me, and the me is M-E as in Maine, right? Just wanted
yes,
to clarify
it's both,
that.
It's both the inside of an individual, a child, as well as Maine. So 9 different natural places that are accessible by most small children are rendered on the pages by Susie Linden, who's an illustrator from Maine, Denmark, Maine. Beautiful job on that one, Susie. And so part of the back of the book has these little invitations to go to those 9 places. And while you're there, you might, you know, for example, lay back on the lawn and see what you can see in the clouds or what birds show up, that sort of thing. Yeah.
Right. Well, you have a fan, a Facebook post from Fran saying, I love Jen Comeau's children's book, a lovely reminder about how what we experience in nature changes us on the inside. Priceless. So that's nice. Let's go to Jill Osgood on the line now. She's a Maine master naturalist. Jill, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be here.
Sure. So what we've been talking about, I know, is very familiar to you, but tell us what it means to be a Maine master naturalist.
Well, you may have heard of the master naturalist program in other states, but here in Maine, we're pretty proud of our program. It's a year-long class that sort of rotates around the state, and the vision is to develop sort of a statewide network of master naturalists who educate and inspire the public about all things relating to Maine's natural world. So right now, the class is going on in Orono, and they're midway in their class. And next year, we'll have two classes coming up. For the first time, we'll have a hybrid class that's centered in Farmington and Western Maine area, but it will be partially online and partially in the field. And then our Southern Maine class will meet at Gilsland Farm in Audubon in Falmouth, which is where I graduated from in 2019. And that class is completely in person. We meet one Wednesday evening a month and then one entire Saturday to be in the field. And we have many visiting lecturers, instructors, lots of hands-on activities. And it's a very rigorous course that teaches anyone who's involved everything that you can think of about Maine's flora, fauna, and ecological principles. After graduating from the program, this nexus of naturalists, as we call ourselves, partners with local land trusts, schools, and other organizations to go out into the field and then share their knowledge of Maine's incredible natural world.
Well, so you said it's rigorous, and I imagine it is difficult to learn everything you need to know to be called a master naturalist. Is this something where someone can not, you know much yet and take the course and be able to pass?
That's a great question. Absolutely, yes. We aren't looking for experts that are already teaching or you know, extremely knowledgeable. We're looking for people who have a passion for learning and also for sharing and volunteering. So it's open to a variety. We do get a lot of retired people, but we're always looking to diversify our student body. So everyone is invited to apply. The applications will go up on our website, which is mainmasternaturalist.org, September 1st. And I believe they close on October 15th, but you can find out more about the program at the website.
That's wonderful. Thank you for sharing that information. That was Maine Master Naturalist Jill Osgood. And Chris, I was curious too, if you could tell us about what you do with Raven Interpretive Programs.
Yeah, I've been fortunate to, after getting out of graduate school, I don't know, 40 years ago, to start doing programs for large travel companies, companies that are bringing folks through New England to share just a typical New England experience. And I got my foot in the door with doing lectures in the evening, before dinner, after dinner. So I've been able to do thousands and thousands of lectures over the years and meet many people from all over the world. And this was one thing that was inspiring to pull something together from our experience with folks having different perspectives and their love of nature, but their often lack of understanding of the science behind. And as you just asked, you know, can anyone start, you know, a naturalist program? And, you know, these plants, these birds, insects, they don't even know their own names. It's so much more than labeling something. It's an experience, and there are many books that are about nature, but that the, like, you know, they teach a level of knowledge like history or geography, but being saturated in nature, there's a knowledge that's transmitted. And I think that's what we've been talking about, without labeling it. It's transmitted, and it's an experience of the heart beyond the intellectual experience. So I encourage, as your last speaker just did with the naturalist program, people that just have an interest to go in that direction. And you don't have to have a whole lot of names. I had a grandmother used to take us around and tell us all the names of the wildflowers in the spring, all the spring ephemerals. And as I grew older, I realized that they were mostly incorrect. She didn't have the right names to many of them, but it didn't change the experience. And so it was a wonderful experience still of labeling things, but not having the correct labels there. So I encourage people to just look in that direction and to put themselves in that position, and you find that nature calls you. Our working title of our book was Birding with God. And after we bounced that off a few people, people thought that they would, someone picking the book up would have a different perspective of what the book was really, really about. So we have a chapter in there, Birding with God. The spiritual connection that takes place when you just look a little bit in that direction, then you're pulled into this, as everyone has expressed that over the last several minutes here.
Sure. Well, thank you. Joining us on the line now is Leanne Zelog. She is a wildlife advocate and filmmaker. The new feature-length movie that she and Mark Zelog made is called A Piece of Forest, and that's peace as in peaceful. Thanks for calling, Lee.
Good morning. Thank you for your invitation, Cindy, to be a guest today to discuss, as you said, the first feature-length film ever created in Maine. It's called A Piece of Forest. It celebrates the beauty and intimacy of wildlife in our state. And I just, if I may, just want to correct. You said Mark Zelog, but my husband is actually Thomas Mark Zelog.
Oh, okay, so there you go.
I don't want there to be any confusion there. What we hope to do is engage audiences through this film, which is having its worldwide premiere this Sunday, June 30th, at the Lincoln Theater in Damariscotta. We hope to engage audiences, allowing them to be entertained and inspired as they observe common and uncommon wildlife and the fragile balance between nature and human culture. We tout it as a quiet film because there's minimal narration. We do not want to create a story. Viewers will experience the wildlife, and the wildlife will create the story through the up-close and very tender moments presented in this movie. A Piece of Forest provides viewers a very intimate experience to observe life in the wild of Maine, and it'll transport them to a place that stimulates their senses in a manner that's very rare and very priceless in this day and age. I don't want you to take my word for it. I have an excerpt from our first movie review that states, bring the children, bring your private self, do not let a piece of forest go unseen, and then get busy making sure everything it brings to us is not lost for future generations. And that was written by movie reviewer Christine Mercer. What I learned through the making of this movie, and actually since I met Tom, my husband of 34 years and the co-videographer and the producer of A Piece of Forest, is that nature speaks without words. But to hear its voice, we must listen. We must look. And most importantly, we must ponder. Paying attention to nature changed my life. A Piece of Forest and the footage that audiences will see will prompt people to ponder. And I truly, truly hope that it changes minds, hearts, and people's lives.
Well, thank you so much, Lee. I really appreciate you sharing the information about the movie. It is premiering this weekend in Damariscotta, and it's called A Piece of Forest. That was Lee Ann Zelog. She's a wildlife advocate and made the film with Thomas Mark Zelog. Congratulations on that. I wanted to go ahead and read an email we got from Bruce. He's writing that I've been a land surveyor for nearly 40 years and have been lucky to be in the Maine woods for hours and days at a time. We often have times during our field work when we pause for whatever reason. I've learned to stay quiet and as motionless as I can. This means I have seen ermine, once a half brown and half white one, bear, fisher, owls, almost got a saw-whet owl to step onto my finger once, fawns, coyotes, foxes, woodcock, partridge, and on and on. The key to seeing the less seen critters is to sit quietly in a position where you don't have to fidget and adjust your body. Motion is one of the best ways for critters to discover you. So certainly one of the many reasons to observe nature is to capture and see the wildlife out there. Andy, I wanted to talk to you a little bit further about how we use our senses for all of this. I know all of you have talked about the different ways you can appreciate nature, but I think most people think of seeing first, right? Seeing the flowers, seeing the animals. But can you talk about how to engage all of your senses in immersing yourself in nature, but also how to do that carefully?
Yeah, I mean, I think that email you just read starts the conversation off really well with just finding a spot where you can just go sit. You know, and obviously if you pick a spot that's near a stream or, you know, where maybe a breeze is always going, you know, certainly you get that wondrous sound of, you know, a babbling brook, or if you happen to be near like poplar trees, quaking aspen, and there's just the slightest breeze makes those leaves move, you hear that wonderful sound of the foliage. The smells, I think for me, yeah, sight is so important, obviously, for so many reasons, but the smells of being outdoors, you know, like on these hot days we've had, it volatilizes so many different odors that we're smelling, some not so nice, some incredible. You know, in the fall when the leaves drop, the smell of those freshly fallen leaves, I think is wonderful, depending on the trees. You know, I think you can taste things too. You know, you're taking a time, you find wild strawberries, and you can eat those, the blueberries that obviously we're surrounded by, we're so lucky to have in this state. So I think it's very easy to appreciate nature, not just by sight, but from all of our senses. Obviously, you know, I mentioned eating things. We need to, you know, be ethical and obviously leave some for all the other nature that surrounds us that also loves the taste of the fruit and such. But, you know, just, it's again, just taking the time to do it and find a different spot once a week even. And, you know, and you'll be amazed at how all your senses will be stimulated if you just spend that extra time and devote time to do that.
Well, great. We do have to take another quick break. Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today, we are learning how to pay closer attention to nature and how best to capture the natural world through writing, photos, art, and other means. My guests are Chris Louie. He's a certified Maine guide with Raven Interpretive Programs. Andy Brand is with Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. And Jennifer Comeau is an author and speaker and musician focused on ecology. Share your questions or comments. Email us at talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram, or call 1-800-399-3566. And calling in now is Noah Charney. He's assistant professor of conservation biology at the University of Maine. He's the author of the book, These Trees Tell a Story. Noah, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks so much.
So I understand you're on your way to a salamander conference. Just tell us a little bit about that. You're on the bus almost right now, right?
Yeah, we're about to get on the bus with the kids out in Ann Arbor. We're doing a special on unisexual salamanders, but going for a little field trip before it.
So very much in keeping with the theme of our show today. Your book underscores how important it is to understand nature. Can you just elaborate on the theme of that?
Yeah, so that book is about sort of reading the sort of the clues to understand the history and your connection to, like, how, for instance, a forest, how it's been affected by people in the past, and how you, the impact you may have on it. But yeah, I've been listening along and I really, really appreciate the idea of slowing down. And I had a couple of stories to share along those lines, if
sure.
I may.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so, I think so much of it is getting out of your head, right, and being in the moment and having like a search image. And so one thought that comes, there's this game that my friend Charlie Neisman, who wrote this book on insect tracking, always played. We drove around the country looking for insect tracking signs, and everywhere we'd stop, we would, I don't know if you've ever seen a green lacewing egg, but it's this little white little dot on the end of a long stalk. It's a really beautiful structure. But anywhere we stop, we'd say, okay, who can be the first to find a green lacewing egg? And it would just be within 5 minutes or so, there would be one around us, wherever we went. And sort of having this little game, it's just like you never think that it's around, and then you start looking, and it's there everywhere. And, along those lines, the other day, I've only seen like one adult eel in my life before. And then last week I was out and I mentioned the eel to my son, and he's like, I'm going to go find one. And I'm like, yeah, right. And so within a minute, he's like, Dad, I found an eel. I was like, no, you didn't. And I came over and there was like a 3-foot eel looking up at him. And it's just like I was stuck in my head not thinking I was going to find things and like thinking about work or whatever. And he's like, I'm going to go find it. And there it was. So.
That's great.
Having an expectation and a search image.
Yeah. And I know that we've heard this term sacred today a few times in talking about nature, and I think you've written about that. What makes appreciation of the natural world reach this level of being spiritual or almost religious?
Yeah, I mean, it's really a feeling, right? And it's really like just a strong sense of connection and I mean, these living beings that are doing their thing, and whether they're plants or animals, and that's really what we are, and knowing your connection and feeling it is just, it's just something magical. And sometimes the magic of finding the things is the joy, and the magic itself is that sacredness. So.
Oh, yes. Well put. And I'll let you go now to your salamander conference.
Thanks so much. Yeah.
So thank you. Noah Charney is an author and he teaches conservation biology at University of Maine. And his book is These Trees Tell a Story. Thank you, Noah. We have so many emails coming in. I wanted to read some email from Betsy. I love that you're talking about taking nature appreciation to the next level. My grandfather used to say, nature in the raw is seldom mild. I spent years wondering what that meant. But now when I'm outside and I notice some creature, I like to consider relationships. When did they last eat? What did they eat? Where will they rest? And will they survive if they do? Nature is always pretty and hard things happen, but that's what keeps the whole system running so beautifully. Jennifer, did you want to follow up on that comment from Betsy?
Yeah, I think it has to do with in ourselves, we remember a kind of relationship with the natural world that we once had. And it was actually Plato 2,500 years ago who decided that we humans were the ones that had the superior intellect and everything else was inanimate. And so that wasn't that long ago. And it's as though there's a kind of remembering that has to take place, a remembering that because we are animals too, because we are nature too, that when we avail ourselves to the possibilities, really magical, sacred relationships kind of thing can happen. Just very quickly, one of the things that in my worldview, I believe in a kind of reciprocal relationship. And so, for example, in winter, I create little nut and seed ball offerings for the four-leggeds in late winter when all of their stores are gone. And I just find some things in the pantry that are all edible for critters, make them and bring them out into the snow and leave them on stones and things. And it sends a message that says that I revere this land and I revere that I'm a part of this and that I can do something to create a kind of health in it. So ways great. That we can be a part of that.
Yes, thank you. And let's go to Warren calling in from Rockland. Hi, Warren. What did you want to talk about?
Yeah, speaking of magical experiences, I want to explain a revelation that I experienced as a young art student in my first drawing class, where our instructor took us out into the the woods, and we were meant to draw there. But he said, don't draw the thing, don't draw the tree or the branch or the leaf itself, draw the space between. And I went into, well, anyway, that was one of the most amazing, almost spiritual experiences, that way of seeing that has kept, remained with me all along, that is looking at the negative space, whether it's in nature or anywhere. The whole way of understanding and seeing and comprehending space was something that I learned through looking out through nature. Thank you. Bye.
That's a wonderful point. Thank you so much, Warren. Just trying to look at things in a different, from a different perspective. I'm going to read an email from Josh and Jenny. At a time when so much attention is focused on screens and human-centered ideas and activities, we have found paying attention to wild nature to be an invaluable practice. We share writings, videos, and photos about our experiences in our Wild Moments newsletters, and that's wildmoments.substack.com. In hopes of showing how being present in nature for even a few moments every day can be a source of beauty, wonder, and lasting connection with wild places and beings. Chris, I wanted to ask you if you can talk a little bit about how documenting things either through journals or writing can be either important for science, you know, and knowing when things happen and what happens, but also for just adding to that connection.
Yeah, I think you're clear on that. We have a section in the book about journaling, nature journaling. We have several nature encounters that we use techniques like this. But as you just mentioned with that email, these folks that have starting to pay more attention to their experiences in nature, it's so clear that these experiences that we've discussed today are transformative, that they make major changes in our perception and our overall awareness. And that I think there's an attractiveness to that. Our mind naturally goes to things of greater enjoyment. And when we just take that correct angle and let ourselves go, we're drawn into this. And when our perception is changed, then the experience is changed and it becomes more appreciated. And that changes the perception also. So there's a spiraling, wonderful turbulence that can just draw people in, and the results go beyond words. When you spend a little bit of time in this this drought, we see things differently. You know, the four of us here see things differently, and when we appreciate that, we start to appreciate everything a little bit more towards whatever reality really is. And nature is the way that rhythm of nature. Just like two tuning forks, you put yourself in that. When you have a tuning fork that vibrates, you vibrate one, the other one will vibrate at the same frequency. And when you put yourself in that position, you're vibrating nature. You're vibrating whatever that is, and that is transformative.
Wonderful. Let's go to Lisa calling in from East Madison. Hi, Lisa. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on the fact that I was addicted to the outdoors, and I think I still am, but I got to make a career of it, and I really loved it when we took city kids out into the wilderness and to see them calm down for a minute and just really enjoy it and feel it and listen, and it was just really great. I didn't make a lot of money, but that's okay. It was really great, and right now I just pulled over. I'm at a nature class across over there with a bunch of kids. it's just a really great career path too. I know nature is free, but it was a good career path, and it got me outside. And even as a social worker, go out to recess. That's where it's at.
Well, thank you, Lisa. That's great that you're working with kids. Thanks for calling in. And Andy, we just have a less than a minute left, but just, she did mention that calming effect, even on, you know, young people, older people. wrap up a little bit with what that does for people, what the benefits are.
Yeah, I mean, for me, and I think the calming, that's a perfect term. When things aren't going great in a particular day, you know, I've had a bad meeting or who knows, something emotional is gone on. You step outside and it could be just out in, the backyard and, take a walk, look at what's going on in the flowers, what butterflies, look at a bee that mimics something or a fly that mimics a bee, or watch the way the seeds are unfurling out of a cone.
I know the point of this is take time, but we're out of time. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
Andy Brand with the Maine Coastal Maine Botanical Gardens. Jennifer Comeau is a forest therapy guide. And Chris Louie is with Raven Interpretive Programs. Our sound engineer was Sam Tracy. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Thank you for listening.